Welcome back to the Ripple Conversations, the podcast where we explore how individual actions create waves of change. I'm your host, Sharon Martis, and today we're tackling one of the most critical topics, education. Specifically, the educational challenges faced by underrepresented groups like Black and Latinx communities and the innovative programs that are building pathways to success. Education is the foundation of opportunity, and yet systematic barriers continue to hold back so many talented young people. I'm excited to welcome our guest, Layla Thomas. She is the CEO and founder of Urban Synergy, an award-winning social mobility charity established in 2007. And Luke Manning, he is the head of the LSEC Foundation and leads LSEC's community investment program. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yes. So how about if we start painting a picture of the current landscape? What do you see as the most pressing educational challenges facing Black and Latinx communities?
Go on, you go, Layla.
Well, there's lots of changes happening now for, you know, the community, you know, for underrepresented groups. In particular, when we're working in schools, you know, where it comes to schools that might be underfunded, how do the young people in those schools access the opportunities so they can reach their full potential, really? And also there's other challenges as well. So, you know, there's conversations around D&I and emerging technology as well with AI. You know, how do we get opportunities to all young people so they can develop those essential skills, reach their full potential, and yeah. I think that's really some of the challenges that we're really having, and what can we do together to make sure that young people have all the support that they need to transition.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I talk to the charities that we support, the charities within our portfolio, and I did before this this podcast, just to get some idea of some of those themes, and some of the big ones that kept coming out. From regardless, really, whether that was Black or Latinx or LGBT or whatever the underserved communities are. First one that came up, teacher perception, which I thought was fascinating because, you know, I don't know how a teacher perceives kids differently based on their race or whatever it is. But that came up number one, loud and clear. The second one was still just inherent racism. Mm. And I'd love to get your take on that because... I think to myself, is that still a thing where you're sat in a classroom and if you had, I don't know, a third white, a third black, a third Latinx, do the white kids get, you know, do they get some kind of preferential treatment? How? Mm-hmm. I don't know how that happens. So it was teacher perception, it was racism, and the one that really came up every single time, lack of role models.
Lack of role models. And that's lack very critical for... students to see that the possibility of what could be. What do you think are less obvious challenges that go unnoticed to the broader public?
Maybe it's biases, you know. Sometimes we hear about, you know, microaggressions and biases.
Yeah.
Maybe get not recognized or appreciated. So you might have personality biases, but you can also have cultural biases as well. Yeah, in certain cultures, it might be, you know, not looking in, you know, don't look people in the eye. Sometimes some cultures are louder, maybe quieter.
Language, like accent.
That's right.
Accent bias so, all the time.
That's right. So you mentioned racism, but yeah, you could have accentism. I call it all the isms. Yeah. You know, which is quite interesting. So some people, how do you put processes in place to kind of make sure those biases aren't creeping into how young people or people are treated, you know? So that's something that we find that's really important. So it's providing, maybe the role models can break that down sometimes. Yeah. So then when they see, you know, CEOs from different backgrounds, they're like, oh, you know, so teachers or just people in general, we all have stereotypes. It's what we see on the TV every day. So you need to be very aware of that. But how do you... reset and rethink, you know, what is talent? You know, how do you maybe understand how you have, how can I say this? Where I mentioned about the cultural and the personality types, but there's also the environment, maybe to understand and empathize, maybe the environment where the young people come from or the schools where they've come from, the challenges what they have. So you might see an A-grade student, but, you know, how were they supported to get those opportunities to become that A-grade student? And sometimes if you provide opportunities to other people, you might unleash another, you know, set of talent because they've had those opportunities to develop the skill set. So it's interesting when you mention about education, because you think maybe academic education, but there's also immersive experiences, which are really important for education as well. So experiences of the workplace. So if you've got mummy and daddy that work in the corporate world, who are these senior leaders, you know, they get that education from birth. You know, they start coming into the workplace at Christmas, you know, to see, you know, walk through the doors, have the hot chocolate in the, you know, in the workplace. Mm-hmm. But how about all those other young people that don't have mummy and daddy that work in those different places? And that's why the work that, you know, Urban Synergy does, you know, and working with Luke and has been a supporter of, is providing those opportunities to those young people so they can see and have those immersive experiences. And they might be good at maths, but actually when they go and work in a department, I think maybe not here, but actually they might like it here. So they get that information so they can make those informed decisions as they're transitioning into their careers.
And that's what you guys do so well. And you guys being Urban Synergy, right? Because it's the obvious stuff though. You know, kids sort of just basically, they'll look up at Canary Wharf or, you know, here in Paternoster Square, and they basically say, I don't really belong there, you know, I can never see myself there. And you give them that first step in to say, of course you can do this.
Yes.
And even then, when you get into the business, then it's almost like, okay, I'm in now, but I can never get there. I can never get to that senior position. So that sort of representation role model bit is so important. But to another layer to your question, which was sort of what are those hidden bits, it all comes back to different strands of mental health. And I was looking at like the racism bit we're talking about. What does that actually mean in terms of yourself? How does it make you feel? And a lot of the time it will be the things like you're feeling isolated, or you're feeling like you're not part of it because you're not represented. So there's a big study on universities in the UK and the US. There's very few black female lecturers, for example.
Yeah.
So if you're sat there and the lecturers are mainly white, or they don't look like you or act like you, you're then reading a syllabus, a curriculum, and the authors are often mainly white. And so you're not getting that representation. So you do feel isolated. You don't feel part of the gang. And of course, that's going to impact how you feel. And then there's other aspects of that as well, where you know, you'll get family pressure, particularly if you come from a family, a little like you're saying, where mummy and daddy, maybe they aren't the wealthiest, maybe they haven't got the corporate jobs, and they've had to really, really sacrifice to make sure you can go to university or school. But then you're going to get the pressure. You've got to do well. You've got to do well. And then last bit, just before I could go back to you, Leela, but I saw this other bit of research, and these aren't the exact numbers, but they give you an idea. University kids in the US, and I think it was third or fourth year. By the third or fourth year, it said that black kids are twice as likely to have a dependent, adult dependent in their family that they're looking after. They're a carer or friends. They're also twice as likely to have their own kids. So they're the care of those. And then they're also twice as likely to have a full-time job as well as doing education. So if you've got all of that layered on, you've got a job, you're looking after kids, you're looking after family, and then those other bits we were talking about in terms of you don't even feel particularly part of it. You might not then even have the time to be part of the gang to go and socialise. It's no wonder that the dropout rates are higher.
Yeah.
So when you look at that kind of stuff, it's quite an interesting picture. It's not to do with skills. It's often to do with, it's almost to do with confidence.
That's right. Yeah, confidence. It's really interesting, that word confidence.
Yeah.
Because if you're not confident, you can't win a race. And that's why I'm a big fan of, you know, the work that the charity does, because we're like a positive network of opportunities, a positive network of positive people, a positive network of people who encourage other people. Mentoring's a really interesting thing. If you're not aware or something, you just don't know how. Somebody said to me at work, Lila, what else can somebody want in life? Somebody who's done it before showing you the way. And I was like, ah, it's very true. You know, so, but this mental health, we've got a young man, he said to me very recently, actually, he called me and he said, you folks have no idea how much you've changed my life.
Yeah.
I thought about it. I kind of understand what he means. And it's around, you know, he's entrepreneurial, he's, you know, set up his own business. And, you know, during lockdown, he's found it really difficult.
Right.
He's found it really difficult. But it's the support we gave him in the beginning, that foundation support that gave him those skills, that confidence, mm-hmm. that shown him his potential, showed him those role models that he's used in life. So when he said he's been at home, he's like, everything's just gone really bad. But then he remembered, no, I'm the person that had a standing ovation in House of Commons with Urban Synergy, you know, when he was like 15 years old. He goes, I can do this. He's been in situations where he's worked with top actors. I won't mention the names of who it is, who they are. You know?
She's got so many famous friends, it's ridiculous.
I know, but that's a nice thing. I think that's what I brought to
but
the table.
You give them confidence. And I haven't really ever thought about
that.
Yeah,
but you give me confidence. Yeah. And you're giving me opportunities, so it's all good. Yeah.
But you do. I think about it. When you come into... So what happens is Lila will bring you know, a range of kids in to experience it. As in LSEG, to experience it, and we get mentors, you know, speed mentoring, interview practice. A lot of that is really, how do people conduct themselves? Mm-hmm. They can sit, you can see them, they're watching. How do you conduct yourself? How do you start the conversations? What do you talk about? What's the etiquette? All of that type of thing. You can't teach that. Yeah. But when they're here, they're often, at the beginning, they come in, and they stood there, and they've got their hands in their pockets, and they sort of shuffle up, and... But you're just infusing with, hey, this is Luke, this is what he does. And you just have a natural confidence. But whether it's a mentor or a buddy or whatever, and this doesn't just apply to your kids, it applies to any kids, it applies to my kids. When you start work and you sort of buddy up with someone, and especially if you buddy up with someone in their late 40s, 50s, something like that, they'll have a natural confidence. They'll have a life confidence. They've been there, they've done that. And the kids just, you can see them, they'll settle down.
Yeah.
And they'll watch and they'll take it all on. And I say to my kids the whole time, of course I want them to have skills. And of course I want to develop that. But I truly believe that's, you know, 10, 20% of what really happens, which is how do you rub along with other people?
Yeah.
And you can only learn that by seeing it and doing it. And so I'm a broken record when it comes to mentoring, buddying, real life experience, work experience. I love it when you bring your kids in. I genuinely love it because, and you have these fascinating discussions with them. And it is nothing to do with race. It's nothing to do with barriers. It's just some kids that come in, and the ones that come in, they want to do something. And you can just feel their energy. And I think you thrive off their energy.
I like the fact that you said it's nothing to do with race. It's nothing to do, because what we're doing is, you're non-judgmental.
Yeah, well, that's...
And one of the things, you know, as I've been growing up or coming into the workplace, or experiences that we all have, and it is experience that we have that make us who we are, I've walked into rooms with all these men, because I'm working in technology, managing a team of men, and they've looked at me like, are you in the wrong room? Actually, they didn't look at me, they actually asked me that. Oh, they assume I'm not the manager. They've gone to somebody else. So I've had a lot of experiences like that. So when I walk into the room, you know, what do you see first? Do you see my race or do you see my gender? And actually what I've noticed is when I walk into a room, I have a load of post-it notes probably stuck on me. Like, oh, this isn't the person that works in IT. This isn't the person who can do this, because they're stereotypes. And we have them
all. And do you feel that then?
Oh, yeah. Straight away. And then I have to kind of earn my way out of that and say, oh, kind of like validation to say, I am this. I didn't know you worked in this. Why are you assuming? I'm sorry, I'm going to say, you know, I've had it in my team that the tall 6-foot white man is the manager. So they've gone straight over to him. Sorry, and what, my team have said...
What's wrong with tall 6-foot white?
Nothing. But they dismissed me. Yeah, you shouldn't dismiss anybody.
But the other way around, so, yeah. I generally wear a tie, three-piece suit and all the rest
of
it.
Well, that's it. Yes, because you want to be maybe seen.
Yeah, but it's...
First impressions count. But I can't hide that, you see. I can't hide how I look. Whereas And that's a race thing. So you can't hide your race, but you can hide your maybe your faith, or you can hide things. But we can't hide. So it's just understanding that and people understanding that, you know? Yeah.
You both have provided very critical examples of how important it is to have the mentorship and students come in and see and interact one-on-one with people at work. When we think about quality education, how important it is to really break these negative cycles of inequality, what strategies do you believe are the most effective to making sure that Black and Latin students have access to high quality learning opportunities?
I think it's a hard question, really, because, you know, some of this will come down to sort of demographics when it comes to wealth. You know, it might be just some families simply don't have the funds to make sure their kids can get through to school. So clearly and I look at, again, the programs of Partners of the ELSIG Foundation, and what they generally do is all they're trying to do is make sure that the access to that education is as equitable as possible. You know, how do we make sure that as many kids from as many families from whatever shade of underserved community is can get in there? So I think the first bit is just to try and make it as accessible as possible. But then once you're in that education, back to that representation point, to make it as accessible in terms of being able to, you've got your seat, you're in the lecture hall or in the school, but you want to make sure that you break down the barriers so that you don't have any disadvantage. And so, and again, that can take so many different forms. So I was talking about, you know, you might have a full-time job and you have caring responsibilities. Then your currency is flexibility. How do you make that course as flexible so people like that can access it? At other times, it might simply be the teacher perception thing. And so there are charities out there that actually then teach the teachers how to not have those microaggressions, how to look at it differently, not have any biases, and then you start to eradicate the racism. So it's a hard question, other than all you want to do is make sure, you want to make sure it's a level playing field and it just comes back to skills. It doesn't come back to anything else.
I agree. Yeah.
And in terms of going back to the mentorship, can you share an example, a story, maybe of your own experience, of a transformative impact mentorship had either on a student or yourself?
I can give two, actually. I'll give both. So when you're talking about education, we worked with an initiative. It was called the London Challenge Programme for young people that were at risk of exclusion. It was in an area called Deptford in southeast London. At the time, the borough had, you know, the highest exclusion levels out of all the London boroughs. But there's a group of boys that we worked with. And actually, I think a lot of the times it's supporting everyone to support the young person, but the young person's at the heart of what we do. So when we did supply those mentorship, those opportunities, it showed those boys where they could really be. Because actually, what the boys actually said, there's no one out there that look like us that are doing well. And that's why the teachers actually reached out to Urban Synergy at that time. Now, those young boys are now working in the city. One of those young boys that I spoke about, who is very successful and got his own business, but also one of those young boys hosted a fireside chat at the London Stock Exchange. And when he said he was going to be doing that, I called him and I said, "Are you okay?" His name's Kofi. I said, "Do you need any help?" You know, Kofi. He's like, "Oh, come on, Leela. You folks trained me." And I thought, "Oh, he's met King Charles. You know, he's been to, you know, Downing Street. He's been into ELSEG. You know, to do Market Open.
Yes,
he learned from us.
Exactly.
He learned from us. You know, he learned from us.
Okay.
So that shows you how when you are providing that nurturing environment for young people to grow, where they can actually turn up and how it benefits themselves, their community, their family, and actually the workplace. That's an example. For me, myself, the power of mentorship, who would have known? I was working in technology, really, but I think the power of mentorship is sometimes people can see the talent in you And I think people saw that talent in me, which I kind of downplayed, I think. But the mentorship was like, you can do this. You're good at that. And you're like, really?
Just keep pushing you on.
Yeah, keep pushing you on. They give you that confidence.
It's back to confidence.
Back to confidence. Mm-hmm. And actually, because some people may be really confident, it doesn't mean they can do their job, but they're really good at selling themselves, exactly. Actually. Putting themselves forward, you know, upselling themselves. That's the power of mentorship. And, you know, the opportunities I got through, like, LSEG, has led me to, you know, to supporting, like, who would have thought that I was supporting 33,000 young people and got a strategy to help 50,000? Yeah. That's amazing.
That's a lot of students to do on your own. So
it's a team.
Yeah. So exactly. Mm. What would you tell someone who wants to do mentorship but doesn't know how to start or what to do?
Contact me. Contact me. And you have to do it. I mean, it develops. It's a two-way street. It benefits two ways, actually, I would say.
But where should they start?
You just do it.
Yes,
it really is. It's as simple as, I mean, it's as simple as just getting up and just doing it. I get it, because you sort of think, well, who would want to be mentored by me? That's the first thing. This is the bizarre thing, is the more senior people get, they often still have that kind of imposter syndrome. And I think, well, you know, who'd want to be mentored by me? So say me, for example, Leela brings in some kids. And these are some pretty cool kids, right? And I think, who the hell is going to be want to be mentored by a middle-aged white guy? They're just going,
you're interesting.
No. So some of it comes in the confidence in yourself. Yes. I had a mentor when I was... I had one mentor who stood head and shoulders above the rest. And I used to be a journalist. That's what I used to be. And he was the guy that sort of... He was my transition from journalism to business, which was comms. And he worked with businesses on sort of leadership, building cultures, all this stuff that, you know, obviously I knew about leadership, but culture, and I didn't really know anything about it. I was a journalist. And I became his right-hand person. And he used to go into these meetings with CEOs of, you know, big financial firms, all the sort of ones that are on the FTSE 100 listed in the exchange, whatever they might be. And he'd walk into a room with the most senior people in multi-billion-pound businesses, and he would instantly control the room.
Yep.
Instantly control it. And I'd sit there, and I would just watch. That's why I said about watching. How does he conduct himself?
Right.
Like I said, what does he do? And it's almost like this. He had this sort of magic that he could bottle, and he had everything you just. He had confidence in spade, charismatic, could speak. If he spoke, everyone listened. Everyone turns
skill.
Around. It's a skill.
It's a skill.
And then, but then you sort of, then you have a dip, because then you think, well, he's amazing at that. I'm never going to be like that. And I remember saying to him once, you know, how do I get to be like you? And he sort of said, you don't want to be like me. You've got to be yourself. You've got to be authentic. But but if I hadn't have spent time with him, and I spent about 5 years with him in the end, I'd never have known the art of what's possible. Where can you get to? How do you build the relationships? How do you? And I still don't do it as well as him. Nowhere near as well as good as him. But that's you're never going to be as good as your mentor. Not really. But then the other way around, to your point, and there's just one that stood out from last year where someone came and worked in my team, and now she's gone on and she's doing brilliantly well. But we had our last conversation, and it was virtual because she was based in a different country, and she said something that I just thought, oh, that's great. That was just like, yes. And she just said, you know, there's always a person in your life that sort of looks at your potential, and they're the person that basically turns that into reality. And so I felt in some way I passed on some of the stuff I learned from my mentor and did it the other way. So and mentorship comes in all shapes and sizes. It doesn't have to be you sit down, you meet every month. But I ended up ghostwriting this guy's autobiography, and he was speaking about his mentors, and he'd gone when he was younger, and he used to say in every month he'd meet up with his mentor and he'd buy him a sandwich, and he'd sit there, and it was the thing.
That's it. That's your time.
And he'd talk about it, and that's your time. But it can be in all kinds of different ways when your time is how you do it.
If it can work for captains of industry.
Exactly.
Probably all of them have mentors and coaches and therapists.
Yeah.
You know, all of these things. Yeah. And that's what they don't teach you in school.
Yeah. And you said, where should they go? Leela said, come and speak to her. Yeah. Equally, come and speak to me. We have 135 charities we support in the LSEG Foundation. And
No excuses, then.
There's no excuses.
Just do it.
We can either find you people that want to be mentored within those charities,
yep,
or the beneficiaries of those charities. We're looking to impact 1 million people by 2030. Wow. Last year, we impacted 250,000 people. Right?
That's
right. So we've got a few opportunities if mentors want to.
Just do it, we say,
mentored,
right?
Just,
what
you
do you call
just
it?
Got
the
to do
ripple
it.
Effect.
Yes. It is the ripple effect.
The one action people can start taking.
Exactly.
To start doing mentorship, talking to either one of you. What final thoughts or advice would you give educators, community leaders, or even students about building pathways to success?
I was at a roundtable breakfast yesterday, and one of the people, they kept using the expression, he was a CEO of a big firm, and he said, when young people come in and they join our businesses, we're just always looking for the gold. We're always looking for the gold. And he said, some of them can come in a bit rough-edged. Some of them need a bit of polishing, but we're always looking for the gold. And so for educators, I think it's always look for the gold. You know, there will be kids that are problematic, but they're going to have some skills. There will be kids that are shy. That's just their personality. So help bring them out. Help be the teacher that gives them the time, gives them the space, gives them the opportunity to be themselves. For the people doing it, it's... So this guy I was talking about, I don't know why, and it's really simple advice, and but he always used to say, back yourself, right? And I used to take real comfort in that. I used to think, yeah, back yourself. And I don't think I've ever come across better advice, really, than that. Just back yourself, you know, go for it. And it all sounds cliche, but the reason it's a cliche is because it's true. Find those mentors. Find the people who are like you. Sometimes, actually, find the people who are not like you. The mentor I'm talking about, by the way, is black. Mm. Right? So I didn't even go out and look for he looks like me. He was just the most charismatic bloke I knew. And I just thought, I want a bit of that. Mm. So for the educators, just always look for, everyone has some gold in them, so look for that. And then for the people, back yourself. That would be my advice.
Beautiful advice. Like what
that.
About you, Layla?
Yeah, I think for the educators to understand and empathize, I think that's really important.
Empathy is a really good word. We haven't done that.
Yeah, you do have to understand. And sometimes it's that experience that you have that make you have empathy. So maybe they do need to go out there. Yeah. But understanding and empathize. And I believe, like I said, every young person or everyone has a talent. Mm. And we're all individuals. You know, we're all individuals. So be kind. If you can lift someone up, then you should do and open that door. You never know where that talent's going to come in from. You don't want to pigeonhole. Just, you know, provide opportunities and provide a positive environment for, you know, that young person to grow. But understanding and empathy is really important.
See, I knew you'd have a better answer. She always does. Ask me something else so I can do better than
that. Well, what is one action you would like listeners to take?
You know, actually, when I heard Leela out there, you know, that sort of open-minded tolerance, that's what I'm trying to tell my kids the whole time. It's just sort of, I struggle with that a bit in the world at the moment. Mm. That sort of just says, just be open-minded, just be tolerant. I love the idea of help people out, and it will come back your way as well. I think tolerance, I'm going to go with that. I think just be tolerant. And mentoring is part of that, because you're saying, I'm going to give my time to someone who wants some advice. And you've got to, and in order to do that, you know, people can be busy. They don't want to do stuff. They don't want to move on. So when I talk about tolerance, it's not just tolerating people. It's just putting in what you want to get out. I just want to see a bit more of that in the world, I think.
I think it's key with everything happening, how fast the world is changing nowadays. Yeah. We've talked about being open-minded, empathy, mentorship. I think we've discussed really good topics for today. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, for me, the one takeaway is just do it.
Yeah.
Be a mentor, get a mentor.
Yeah.
It's positive growth, positive development. That's the main takeaways. And this conversation is about, you know, the ripple. You'll see opportunity or growth unleashed, especially we're in a global business market. Mm-hmm. It's really important that we, you know, full potential for everybody. So be a mentor and get a mentor, I would say.
Yeah, definitely.
Just do it.
Open-minded. I think that's...
I know. Yes. Open-minded and non-judgmental.
Yeah, exactly.
Empathy. They all go hand in hand together.
Well, these are all the best human traits. Yeah. They're all the best human traits. And guess what? They're the things that create the most positive impact in the world, you know, rather than being divisive or being binary.
Yeah.
You know, you're black, you're white. Oh, God. It's just like sort of, you know, just it's you've got to understand that Leela's gone on a different path to I've gone on. We've all had different challenges and all the rest of it. But that open-mindedness to be willing to help and just listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got to listen to, in anything in life, you know. In fact, I would urge everyone to look at almost like the two extremes of any argument. You know, why are the people that are really thinking one thing at that end of the argument and why are the people thinking the other end? The truth, of course, will always lie in the middle. And so, but you've got to listen to both of those things and then you bring out those other stuff.
Can I say something as well? I know this is maybe not in line, but it's that reset, rethink is really important. So there's some processes or techniques that sometimes people do. So, you know, when you can be the outsider in the room or sometimes you feel like you're not being listened to or given the chance. So some leaders, they'll let their other people in their team speak first.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, they can... dominate, but it's great for you to sometimes stand back and give other people the chance, the opportunity to bring the best out. It's just something I was waiting to say. So reset and rethink.
Something that's just as little as that, right? It can empower somebody and put them to the...
somebody.
So you've got us going now.
And give them the confidence.
And give them the confidence
that they need in order to step up and feel better about themselves and progress.
Yeah.
And when you're saying about that inclusivity...
Mm.
Because that's what you're really saying. It's like, include everyone in the room.
That's right.
Make sure the voices are heard. I worked a number of years ago with a guy who set up an improv troupe. And the improv communication skills are so valuable, not just in business, but in life. And there's the one simple one that he gave me, again, that sticks. There's always those little bits that sticks. Is when you're having a discussion... You'll often say, people just want to get their point across.
Yeah.
They're waiting for you to stop talking, Leela, so I can talk. Right, because yes, but here's what I really want. The real power is coming when you listen to that and you build on it. So Leela would say, you know, I think it's reset, and I don't agree with that. I do agree with that, by the way, but say I didn't. I go, yes, but the thing you're missing, Leela, but the key is yes and. You go, yes, reset's great. And what that allows to do is this, and it's a really inclusive way of, you know, bringing people on board with you, because you're effectively, what you do as improv is you take from the other person and you build on it. So yes and instead of yes but.
Yeah.
You try it. Try in conversations.
Yes and?
Yeah. No, you've used it wrong, Leela.
Okay.
That won't work like that.
Yeah.
So it's a... But again, it comes back to all those things we're talking about, that sort of... open-mindedness and inclusivity and representation.
Being a mentor as well, what people don't see is how it develops your personal skills as well. Your own skills. So communication skills, you know, listening, influential skills. It's almost like developing leadership skills, you know.
Absolutely.
Because we're all leaders, I suppose, in some way. But, you know, you develop those skills as well. So I just wanted to add that in there, because sometimes people think, oh, it's all one direction. It's actually not. I've learnt a lot myself from the work that I do.
It's exactly the same for volunteering, because when everyone else gets 2 days of volunteering, and a lot of the, well, we do loads with you. How many hundreds last year?
Lots
and lots of people. So we had about 7,000 people in 2024 volunteering, and there's so many benefits to that. So many benefits in terms of, is this the type of culture, for example, that you want to work at LC? Yes. Are you helping the community? Yes. Are you helping charities in some cases with your expertise? Yes. In other cases, it's more we're going to go and, you know, clear a forest or something. That's fine as well. But to your point, it's also for you, because you're suddenly using your skills in an entirely different environment. And how you build those and hone those, because you can become quite one-dimensional in any business. You get sucked into the day-to-day, you know, you've got deadlines, there's a way of working, there's a way of thinking, there's a hierarchy you have to follow. All important, and that's how corporates run. But just stepping out of that into a different environment, and you'll get sometimes you just get re-energized. You reset.
Yeah, reset.
And you develop the skills. So it's a virtuous circle that you need to tap into rather than getting tapped into that vicious circle, which is what, like I'm saying, without wanting to get too deep about stuff, that you're just seeing so many arguments and so many things happening in the wider world.
Love that.
So influence your own world, your own immediate vicinity, and
that can cause a ripple effect.
The ripple effect.
The ripple effect. Thank you so much, Leila and Luke.
Thanks
for your
happiness.
Wisdom and all your beautiful experiences and sharing those with us today. Education is the starting point for so many ripples of change. When we invest in young people, we invest in a brighter future for all of us. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Until next time, keep making ripples.